Welcome to the Weekly Juice Podcast, where we discuss all things real estate, personal finance, investing, and entrepreneurship. Whether this is your first time here or you're an avid listener, we're thrilled to have you as a part of our community. Our goal is to share stories of successful entrepreneurs and investors in the hopes that they assist you along your journey towards financial freedom. We discuss successes, failures, systems, motivations, experiences, tips and tricks, and key lessons learned over time. After each episode, you should feel motivated, empowered, and prepared to take action in your own life. Make sure to tune in every Wednesday to get your weekly juice. You can also find us on Instagram at Weekly Juice Pod, where we post daily content, personal finance tips, and document our own journey towards financial freedom.
Welcome back to the Weekly Juice. As always, Ryan and Corey here with another episode for you. Today we had on special guest Marcus Murray. Marcus is a real estate investor from California who invests out of state. He's paid off six figures worth of debt and has built a pretty strong real estate portfolio with his wife and are now educating people on social media how they can do it too.
Yeah, they're known as Black Married and Debt Free on social, him and his wife. They got a really, really cool story of, like you said, they paid off debt, but then they just like were like, oh, we're going to invest not just out of state, all the way across the country, and then start to build their portfolio in North Carolina. As they scaled a little bit of their portfolio there, they're like, oh, we're going to a different market. We're going to what makes sense for us. And he was just a really, really cool guy. You could tell he's done a couple podcast episodes in his day because smooth talker. And it was really a pleasure to have him on for him to share his story of using a HELOC, right? And we get into HELOCs here. This is a great episode if you want to know how they work, because he bought his property in, I think he bought his original property in cash after he paid off a bunch of debt. So he had no loan on it. And then it appreciated over $200,000. So he was able to get this line of credit, 100, 150 grand, to use that to buy property. And it was like the ultimate hack, as he calls it.
Yeah, he essentially became his own bank. He and his wife bought a property in California for $80,000. It appreciated, as Corey said, to about 230. And then he was able to get a home equity line of credit, that's a HELOC, for $125,000. And then he was able to leverage that into buying more properties out of state. And then he snowballed his portfolio. The whole episode just basically showed you just have to do a little bit of research, or I would say a lot of self-education, but yeah, then taking the action. And right, he's a go-getter. He's a hustler. He's also a musician on the side, and he's like leveraged his abilities into a side hustle. And it just kind of helps paint the picture of this guy. He's just a hustler. He's willing to go get after it.
Yeah. And how many people listening to the show own their own home, like own their primary residence? So this is available. This is our 96th episode, and there's not many episodes that are as relatable to, I think, the masses on what you can do in order to build wealth. And he chose real estate as his avenue. And Marcus says during the episode, he's like, I don't think millennials have a choice anymore. We can't just sit at our jobs and make money and expect that, unless you're making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, you can't expect that you're going to win that way, with especially the way the inflation is going. So he's done something. He's going to get to 13 doors. He'll have enough for financial freedom. And then he has optionality with his life. So it was a really, really good episode where he gives concise information. And I think everyone can relate to it.
Couldn't agree more. So especially if you have your own home and you have equity in it, you can start playing around and become your own bank. So you definitely want to tune in. Great episode today. Let's bring in Marcus. Are you a real estate investor looking to streamline your business? Maybe you're tired of all the paperwork and multiple lines of communication with your tenants. Well, we have a solution for you. We're now personally using Rent Ready to help manage all of our rental properties. This all-in-one property management software assists with rent collection, maintenance, tenant screening, credit reporting, communication, and much more. Rent Ready provides benefit to both the landlord and the tenant due to all of the easy-to-use features that can be managed online or via the mobile app. They recently just launched a new feature with their partner REI Hub called Rental Property Accounting. This allows us to track our income, expenses, and cash flow all in one place rather than managing multiple spreadsheets. We're huge proponents of systematizing our business, as you know, to get more time back in our day. And Rent Ready allows us to do just that. If you'd like to sign up, visit rentready.com. That is rentready.com. And make sure to use our code JUICEPOD for 50% off your Rent Ready subscription. Well, Marcus, officially welcome to the Weekly Juice Podcast. Corey and I are thrilled to have you on the show. As I mentioned briefly before we started recording, we've been following your journey for quite some time. You've inspired us to take action in our portfolios, and we're just thrilled to have you on here, man. So thanks for coming.
Absolutely. I'm really glad to be here. Thank you both for having me on your show. Excited, man.
Absolutely. So if you could just give a little brief background on yourself, who you are, where you're from, and then how you transitioned to become a real estate investor.
Wow. Great question. So my name's Marcus, and my wife, who's not here, we kind of built this thing together. So it was in 2005 when I had two full-time jobs at the time. And I just couldn't make that work. And so I had to let one go. And at that moment, we realized, one, we live in California. Two, we have more month than we have money. And so that wasn't a very fun feeling. And, you know, at the time I was like in charge of the finances. So I had to kind of come to my wife and say, hey, this is where we're at. And then, so we put our heads together and, you know, formulated a plan to get ourselves out of the hole we were in. We had, you know, six figures worth of debt that included our home, you know, student loans, car note, pretty much a lot of the things that most Americans have. And so for 2.5 years, we were laser focused. We increased our income on our W-2 jobs. We also picked up side hustles and, you know, 1099 type work. I'm a musician, so I was able to kind of flip that into some different streams of income. And in 2017, we paid off our debt, man. And that kind of got us at zero, right? And we like to tell people that paying off debt is just the foundation to, you know, financial independence. It's not the end all be all. So we knew we had to do something else. And real estate really seemed like a great way to do it. My wife brought the idea to me. She said, hey, there's people retiring with real estate. And I was like, how does that work? So yep. We did a lot of research and saw that, you know, people are buying real estate, renting it out, you know, in the simplest form, renting it to a long-term tenant and creating wealth that way. So we decided to hop on and we'll get into the story. But since then, we've acquired 5 properties all out of state, and we acquired 3 just last year. So it's starting to scale itself and we're getting pretty excited.
Awesome. That's great. Marcus, I'm curious what flipped the switch for you? Like what, cause a lot of people do what you do. They get into debt, but they don't stop getting into debt and they live their life that way. Right. But you decided to make a change and like a big one. Like what was it? Was there a moment in time? Was there a conversation? What made you decide to say, I'm not going to live this way anymore. I'm kind of going to switch it up.
Man, great question. You know, for me, it was that uncomfortable feeling of knowing that I don't make enough to cover the monthly bills. And I think never wanting to be in that position again is kind of what made us, you know, make that change. We got better jobs and was like, okay, well now we're at the place where we can cover the monthly bills, but we felt like, but this can happen again if we don't address it and really eliminate the debt. You know, we got sick of just managing it. And that's what I think a lot of Americans are doing. We're managing this elephant that's in the room. We're just keeping it, you know, just stay over in that corner. I wanted to get rid of the elephant. And so that feeling of never wanting to be in that position again, I think that's what did it for us.
Love it. And then you mentioned about your real estate portfolio, how you have 5 units and you've bought 3 in the past year. Is that what you said?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So what was the way that you used to scale? Because buying 3 in a year, for some investors, some big time investors, they might not be scared of that. But for some people who are just getting started, that's like unfathomable, right? Mm-hmm. So what was the strategy that you used to scale to where you are as quickly as you did?
Man, everything kind of went fit like dominoes falling. So when we paid off our debt, we paid off our primary residence. And our primary residence we bought in 2009. We bought it for $86,000. We live in Sacramento, California, 3-bedroom, 3-bath condo. Like it's unheard of. And so when we paid that off, that being only $86,000, we paid that off. And And I believe it was 9 years later, the condo was worth 230. So we had all this equity. We was like, you know, where are we going to get the down payment to kind of start this buy and hold strategy that we knew we wanted to get into. And we took out a home equity line of credit on our first residence. So what that did, we took that line of credit and bought a home in Greensboro. We bought that cash, and, you know, and we were newbies. We were green. Some people would have said, hey, take that money and, you know, put down payments on five properties. Looking back, we might have wanted to do that, but we were kind of getting our feet wet. So we got that first property. We did that. Then we still had some of the line of credit, and we used the remaining balance to get a down payment on our second property. So now we're two properties in. The cash flow from those properties started to kind of, you know, build on its own. And that's really how we were able to scale to the three properties we got last year, just letting that cash flow build. And we just reinvested into the real estate. And now, you know, when people hear, when family and friends hear, you bought another house, they automatically think money. But the real estate is not, we're not spending that. We're literally letting that, you know, compound, and then we're putting it back into more real estate. So really it's become a self-sustaining thing. And now we're starting to see a scale. So that's how we were able to get to three.
Really cool. You essentially became your own bank, right? And you're just leveraging the equity in your properties to buy more and scale. Yes, so sir. For people that don't know, just at like the most elementary root of it, can you explain what a HELOC is and the process you went through in order to obtain one? Just because people might not realize they have equity in their home and they can start playing the game.
Absolutely. So there's two common ways that people tap into the equity in your home. And equity is simply, you get equity in your home by just the natural market appreciation, and also you paying down your mortgage. So you're creating a spread of what you owe on the home and what your home is worth. And that's your equity. And so an easy way to tap into it is to go to an institution. We actually went to Wells Fargo, but they no longer, I'm not sure, but as of a few months ago, they no longer offered equity line of credit. You can either tap into your equity with a line of credit or a cash out refinance. We did the research on what would be best. And the thing that appealed to us about the line of credit is, like you said, you're pretty much your own bank. So you can get a line for, say, $100,000, and you can tap into some of it. And whatever that sum that you tap into, that's what you repay. And the part that you haven't touched yet, there's no repayment on that yet. So we thought that was good, you know. And so, yeah, you go to your institution and you get out a line of credit. Now, keep in mind, let's say you have $100,000 of equity in your property. The institution, the bank, is only going to give you access to about 70% of that, 70 to 80%. It depends on, you know, who you're going with. But you're not going to be able to get 100% of that. So keep that in mind. So, you know, that's just something to consider. But it's really quite simple. You're just taking out a line of credit on your home and using your home as collateral.
Yep. And to add on to that, just to give people an idea of what you did and how this works, you were in a fortunate position where you were intentional about how you spent your money. So you have a $230,000 home. The loan to value, there is no loan anymore, right? So what my guess is, at least this is how it would work if you did have a loan, is that they take that $230,000 number, just to paint a picture of actual numbers, and let's say they used 80%. I just ran the math. You would have access to $185,000. And essentially, you're writing checks to yourself. Now, this can get dangerous, right? If you're not smart about your money, because you can literally write a check to yourself and go buy a Maserati for $100,000 if you wanted to, right? It's your money because you become your own bank in this way. So, full disclosure, Ryan and I are going through this process on our primary residences. We're like, we have this equity. We've owned our primary residence for, you know, 3 to 5 years each, and the market's been great. This is how we're going to scale our own portfolio. You just have to be smart about paying it off, because the loan is typically adjustable rate. So can you talk a little bit about that and why maybe that didn't scare you? Because I think it could scare people, as opposed to like a 30-year fix where you know you're locked into this 3% rate. Maybe just elaborate on the research that you did on that end.
Yeah. I mean, you make a great point. You know, many people use these tools of cash out refi or home equity line of credit to upgrade their kitchen or to add an addition to their home or, you know, remodel, while that's cool, now you're on the hook for that, right? Now you've just created another bill essentially. Mm-hmm. But with us, we wanted to take that money and put it into an income producing asset, which like real estate, where you know, you're doing your numbers and you're saying, okay, if I spend $100,000 on this home using 1% rule, I should, if I get $1,000 back per month, you know, rent, that should be able to not only pay the mortgage, but also pay back what I'm owing as far as because, you know, you have to pay monthly paying back this line of credit. And then maybe I could cash flow, you know, some money too. So it's just about making sure you're, because like you said, it can get kind of interesting if you're buying something where your return isn't really yielding enough to pay that mortgage and your line of credit back. But fortunately for us going out of state helped because homes were more affordable. There was a better return on our investment. And so that afforded us enough money to where we weren't worried about, man, we're going to have this extra bill that we got to come out of pocket and pay. We did it strategically so that the real estate pays for itself.
Love it, man. That's incredible. I want to continue to touch on the home equity line of credit because it's a really powerful tool. But I also want to note here that a lot of people are afraid to invest out of state. And you live in one of the, if not the most expensive state in the country, one of. So what about North Carolina? How did you even get in touch with North Carolina? You know, free some people's minds here about investing. Legitimately, you invested over 3,000 miles away.
Yeah. It's funny, man. We did it very organically. I've told this story before, but it's like we kind of just spun the globe similar to Hakeem on Coming to America. We didn't know where we wanted to go. We just knew we can't afford it here. And so we picked out a few places and we just began to run the numbers. What is the what are homes going for? You know, we were really interested in single family homes, 3-bed, 2-baths. What are 3-bed, 2-baths going for in this area? And what rent could we get back for those? Simple as that. And, you know, we kind of used I mentioned earlier, the 1% rule is like a quick tool to kind of know if this is even something I should proceed with further, or if, hey, I don't hit that 1%, I'm not going to get $1,000 return on my $100,000 investment. Now let's move on to the next one. So we did that with Greensboro. We had a friend that actually was moving to Charlotte, and we thought, man, Charlotte might be, you know, that seemed like a nice spot. And then we saw, no, the homes are going for more than what we really want to pay. Well, what's the surrounding area that could be growing because, you know, it's adjacent to Charlotte, and Greensboro was that area for us. And so we just set our sights there, and it's scary, but the more you do it, it's really not, because I like to tell people, you got to have your core four, your lending. You got to have how you're going to have the money. You got to have that situated, have a real estate agent, property manager, and general contractor. If you have those in place, you can set up shop anywhere and you can do everything remote. And a lot of times, if you find one superstar, like let's say if you find a real estate agent that's just a go-getter, they usually will have access to all of those other entities, and that really gives you peace of mind. So that's pretty much how it went for us.
That's really cool. I was going to ask you I appreciate you mentioning the core four. I was going to ask you how you built your systems out in Greensboro, being that you are so far away. Did you specifically find, like, your real estate agent? Was he or she just a rock star and then gave you the rest of the contacts? Is that as simple as it was?
Man, for Greensboro, that's as simple as it was. We kissed a few frogs, you know, call some cold calling. First of all, we just used, you know, Zillow, realtor.com, and saw houses that we liked. And we were just cold calling the agents that were attached to those homes. And, you know, my wife got some bad vibe from a couple of agents, and, you know, they're asking a lot of questions. They, you know, it's becoming more the norm now, but I feel like, you know, a few years back, it was like, you live in California and you want to buy out of state. It's like, they're kind of like, you know, asking a bunch of questions. It's just like, yes, that's what I want to do. I've done my research, but, you know, I just didn't get great vibes from some agents. But it was one particular gentleman that we called, and He was a young agent. He was, you know, excited, and he had access to all property management. He had access to general contractors. And so he just really helped me put that team together. And then I realized, man, that's really all you need is those four. And you can set up shop, you know, anywhere in the country. And so that's really what we've been able to do.
Marcus, I think maybe if you're willing to share, you don't have to share exact numbers, but maybe if you could paint this picture for how this HELOC works in terms of one of your properties, because there's a balance and you kind of have to decide. Ryan and I are going to do this too, because we're going to buy investment properties with our HELOCs. Okay, how much of the cash flow are we taking and paying off this HELOC? How much are we, you know, putting into our business? So if maybe you could give us an idea of the amount of money that you use on a property and then how much money you owe monthly on that HELOC, and what the cash flow is doing. You mentioned that it's covering it, but I'm curious by how much, what kind of cash flow are you seeing in these areas? Maybe just elaborate a little bit on some details.
Yeah. Well, here's the cool, unique thing about our story is that I'll try to remember those numbers, but we've since sold our primary residence.
Got it.
Thus paying off, you know, that's a line item in the HUD statement at that point. And so now we own that other property free and clear. Because we were able to sell it, you know, sell our primary residence. But just kind of going back and thinking, so we had a home equity line credit for $125,000, and it was a 20-year loan on that. So our payments were somewhere around, I want to say around $400,000.
Got it.
And so we went and got a property where the rent, we were able to rent it out for around $1,100. We spent $100,000 on the property. So we were able to buy that cash. And so now the only person we needed to pay back was the line of credit. And so we were, you know, we were able to make that work. $500 on the line of credit. We're getting $1,100 from rent. And so that kind of worked out. That gave us, you know, that cash flow. Now, of course, you put away for your expenses and, you know, repairs, taxes, future repairs, paying your property manager 8 to 12%, 10%. And so even with all of that, we were still coming out with some cash flow. So that's
I love this, because there's, you know, we've talked to a lot of investors, and everyone has a different story and everyone has a different approach. And some investors will say, well, Marcus, why would you buy that property in cash? Because you can get such a better return elsewhere. But you, sounds like what you're doing is you came from a position of like, okay, I really want financial security for my family. Yeah. And ultimate financial security in my estimation is like, get a bunch of paid off properties. Yeah. Like, cause those things are going to appreciate, and then you're going to be able to use the cash flow to live your life. And I just like the to each their own strategy here, and to pay that property off. It's a, from an investing air quote standpoint, people might say, that's not a smart decision, but for you it was. And I just think that's cool to know.
Yeah, I really like that. And it's interesting. You could also sell off the properties too. Like once at a time, you just sold off your primary residence. So I'm curious, are you now like house hacking or are you renting somewhere? What's your, like your main gig of like where you stay now?
Yeah, right now, man, we're in our, what we like to call our forever home. So we were able to do, because the primary residence, while it didn't pay off our new residence, we were able to put a substantial amount down. So now we were living in a bigger home in a better part of California, and we're not paying nearly as much as we would have been paying had we not been able to carry over a lot of that money. So that's kind of how we're doing our primary residence. And like, we've set up real estate to where now that's self-sustaining. So that's generating its own money, and so on and so forth. So that's pretty much where we are now. But it all started with the home equity. None of this would have happened without the home equity line of credit. And so
it's amazing. I think your story is incredible. And it's funny, Corey and I have mentioned in so many different episodes, we're like, oh, we need to get into private lending and having essentially like either partnering with someone equity wise or some sort of fashion of like a joint venture where that like we get some extra cash, because we're sick of saving up the 50, 60 grand,
yep,
putting it down and then going back to work, recycling it, taking some time, and then, you know, buying another one. So interestingly enough, I heard your episode on Coach Carson. I'm going to give him a plug. We love Chad. And I was like, dude, we got to research HELOCs 100%. So literally last week I heard this, we started researching HELOCs pretty heavy, listen to episodes, YouTube. And then I just started calling lending institutions over and over and over. It's funny. You mentioned Wells Fargo not offering these anymore. Like, out of the, let's just say I called in one day, 10 of them, like 8 of them did not offer because rates are so low. That's what their excuse they use. They're like, hey, we don't offer HELOCs anymore. And they kept trying to get me to refinance my primary and essentially, you know, give me a big loan and something that I didn't want to do. And like, then I'm forced into paying that back at a fixed rate every single month. It's literally a second mortgage, right? Now, the HELOC option is it gives you flexibility to pay that back as you wish, right? And then you have that balloon payment in 10 years of like paying off your whole loan and you're just paying interest payments all the way up. So I had to like tell these institutions, like, no, specifically, we're not going to continue the conversation unless you have a HELOC. And it's funny. So just for people that hear this and that you want to go out and explore HELOCs, just be wary that people are going to try to get you to do a refinance, a cash out refi. Mm-hmm. And just know your stuff.
Just keep calling different banks. Cause that's what happened to you. You just called a bunch of banks and we got locked in, or not locked in, but we got connected with a smaller bank. Yeah. Who's like, they want to build a relationship with investors. They were like wide-eyed. They're like, this is great. And we're going to get a home equity line. We have to pay like, instead of paying like a $65 online appraisal, we'd pay for a full appraisal, $400, right? And instead of doing that, now instead of getting 70% of loan to value on our HELOC, we're going to get up to 85. Wow. These little things, the small banks, I think, would be the way to go.
The small banks, yeah. So we literally like some bank in Northern Pennsylvania outside of Pittsburgh, we're down in Philly, and she was the nicest lady. And I was like, after calling everyone back, I'm like, I'm going with her. You know, the rates are all similar. It goes based off of the market anyways. And I just like, she educated me on it even further and gave me the time of day. So, and we're relationship guys. I think all three of us are. And so it's, you could tell, you're like, all right, my gut was saying like, let's just go with this lady. And, you know, then I ended up getting Corey on the phone. We're both going and have, you know, getting our HELOCs in process of completion. But I wanted to touch on really quick, he mentioned the appraisal. That is part of the process, right? They have to come out, yes, and actually appraise your home and see what it's worth, right?
Yes.
And then the simplest way, like the easiest way, would be like, oh yeah, we'll pay $65, but mm-hmm, that 10%, then they'll give you 70 to 75% loan to value ratio. By simply paying $400, that's another $300, right? $350. Someone comes to your house, checks it out. That gives them the confidence that, okay, your home is really worth what we think it's worth. And then they're like, then we'd be willing to give you 85%. So like, okay, that 10% is a huge number. So that's kind of the route we're going. And I had the appraiser call me today. So just letting people know, this thing can come to fruition pretty quickly. Yeah. Once you hear something, take action. Cause there's a lot of people that hear the podcast, they're driving, they're like, oh, it sounds good. And they don't do the research. Like, just do it, take the action. And you know, we're your case study here. So thanks for hooking us up.
Yeah. I love that, man. And it really speaks to how much of a hack that is, that institutions are like, we got to stop this. We can't, like, let's, you know, let's get rid of this. But
that's why we're like, we got to get this done quick.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, we got to go. Only like 2 out of 10. That's 20%. That's not a lot. So yeah, it really is a hack. So, but I think we should transition to the debt payoff, because I don't want to skip over this. You paid off over $100,000 worth of debt. And then you jumped into investing. There's a lot of people that will go back and forth with the, hey, should I pay off my debt first? Should I invest? Can I start investing while I have debt? I want your thoughts on it. Like, I know you guys paid off first, I think. But what's the mantra on this for you? Where your head at?
I love this question, man, because we all evolve, right? And I think you spoke to this earlier. It's like some people are more, hey, I want my real estate paid off, and some people don't mind, you know, leveraging. And so I think me and my wife, we've graduated to, we're more open-minded about, you know, leverage and having debt on real estate. But as far as personal debt, we in that moment, we wanted no parts of it. And so that helped us, because we have some people's risk tolerances are different. And ours, we wanted a clean slate to work with going into real estate investing. We didn't want to do real estate investing and then our family situation isn't 100% right. We didn't want the two worlds colliding. We wanted separate church and state. You know, real estate is doing this and our personal is doing that. So for us, it felt necessary to start with zero debt, you know, because now we feel more emboldened. We feel more confident to pursue real estate investing. When it comes to real estate investing, we went into it with the same mindset. Man, we're going to pay these houses off. You know, we're going to get all that cash flow. Man, that sounds great. As we got into it with the second house, we wanted to get a second property, but the first one wasn't paid off, right? And so we knew, do I want to sit here and really pay this off? I'm sorry, I take that back. Let me get myself together. So the first house was paid off, but with the second one, we got a loan on it. So we did 20% down. And so we wanted to get our third property and we're like, okay, but house number two isn't paid off yet. Do we pay this off, you know, speed pay and wait 5 years, or do we get in this market? And so my wife, we toured the second house one day. I think we went down to Greensboro and we were in between tenants or something like that. And we looked at the house and my wife's like, I like this house, but I don't want to pay this one off. I think we're going to let the tenant pay this one off. So then our strategy changed there. It's like, you know what? Let's let the tenant pay this off and let's get more serious about acquisitions. And so that's when we kind of shifted our mindset. It's like, let's scale this thing and then buy smart, you know, get good returns on everything we have and then let the tenants pay those down for us. And so that kind of shifted our mindset. So it's about finding a balance, you know, to each his own. But that's kind of where we fall as far as having debt personal and having debt real estate. You know, that's kind of where we are. That's our philosophy.
Yeah, it's amazing to be able to have the option to decide. And then if you get, it's hard to buy real estate. It's not easy. It's not easy to continuously acquire. More people are learning about it. The market is getting saturated. It's more competition. But once you have those assets and you own them, you can turn them into more high performing assets, which is the really cool part about it. Whether that's taking out a HELOC or whether that is paying it off, you know, you can be in a really good financial position, even with just 5 paid off properties. You might have, you know, kind of have your own ability to go pull money out. You could pull money out at a HELOC at a 3% interest rate and invest it in the stock market if you wanted to and get a 10% return over 10 years. So like you have all this, it's your money. It's just tied up in different assets. So I think that just listening to different risk tolerances and ways to go about it is just pretty inspiring. Yeah. I guess the next thing that I want to touch on here is like, do you have a specific financial independence number that you're trying to get to? Like, where are you trying to go with this? Are you trying to scale to 20 properties? Are you trying to scale to 50? Are you good with 6 or 7? Like, what's your aim? And do you have a number that you're trying to achieve? Because I know you have some other things going on that we'll get into.
Yeah, great question. For me, fellas, I'm more of the, let's just keep buying. Let's just keep going. I don't really want to think about it. I just want to just do the work. And my wife is more of the, okay, but let's plan. Let's make a plan so we can see what are we shooting for. So that's a great question you asked. For us, financial independence will come with 13 properties. And when I say properties, the type of properties that we've bought so far, if we get to number 13, we then have the option to come off the job because the cash flow from those properties will exceed what we both are making on our 9 to 5s.
Is that 13 paid off? Is that or 13 no, with leverage?
Yeah, leverage. There's still leverage in the way we've bought our last three. So 20% down with the returns we're getting. So we transitioned to Montgomery, Alabama. Our last three properties were purchased in Montgomery. And we were able to buy those properties anywhere from 50 to 70,000. I think we bought one for 52, one for 60 and one for 70. They're 3-bed, 2-baths and they're all getting around $900 rent. So with that return, you know, if we could keep buying like that and we get to 13, we'll have enough cash flow to where we can kind of come off our jobs. So that's pretty much where we are with that. It was projected for that to take us 10 years, but because we're just seeing it scale. So like some things you can't calculate, you know what I mean? when you set aside this amount for an investment and you're able to get it for $10,000 less, or you think it's going to rent out for X and it rents out for, you know, more, yep, then the numbers kind of change. And so we're actually ahead of the game. So I honestly do this because I want to come off the job.
And your properties will appreciate and the rents will increase. That's typically what happens. So if in 5 years you're planning to have 13 and that would be your number, it might be 11 if the rents increase in the way that they have consistently for a long period of time.
There's ebbs and flows, right? You could have it appreciate $50,000 you weren't expecting, but then you have to replace two roofs and you're like, oh damn, I'm down 20. Right. So it's a never ending cycle, right, with real estate, but it's also part of the game. Once you start enjoying the game and like and you're in the hustle, I think that's what we all enjoy about it. Yeah. But the cool part for me is like, once you can start manipulating your cash that you already have in certain assets and play around, it's literally like Monopoly. Like you're going around and you're becoming your own bank. I love that idea. I don't have to worry about always going to a lending institution or having to hit someone up for money. It's just like, we made our plan. We're stretching our cash and putting in different spots, and it's super fun. And I just think it's interesting, like you said, to hear everybody's tactics, and yours is an awesome one too. I wanted to touch on really quick. I know you moved from Greensboro down to Alabama. So what are you looking for when you're running your numbers? Like, is there a cash flow number that you look for with every property? Like, you won't touch something if it's like under 200 or something like that. What's your barometer?
For us, I think 200 is kind of the minimum. Anything above that, we're happy with. Now, I actually heard another podcast of an investor who was investing in Montgomery. So that kind of made us do some research, and we saw that because it's not a high, the homes don't gain value, but it's a high cash flow area. Mm-hmm. So it's that balance too. It's like Greensboro, we're pretty much priced out of that market because the homes have done well, which is good for our first two, but we knew we couldn't, we would be paying
rapidly
more.
Scale. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we went somewhere where the home prices were just, a little bit less, but the cash flow from the rent is really good. Now, homes may not appreciate at the rate, in some areas, but we were okay with that. So that's kind of what we look for.
What do you say?
It's like a good baseline though.
200 baseline. Okay, cool. So what's your rebuttal to this? Someone says, hey, listen, you're putting all this time, money, and effort into real estate and you're only cash flowing $200 a month. Like, what if I drop my money into the stock market? And last year, it had like a 25% return, right? So why real estate over, just maybe passively dumping it into the stock market?
Love this question. And that was my retort to my wife when she brought real estate to me. I was just like, $200, I could, do a yard sale and get that, But it's passive. One, it will grow as you pay the home down, as you increase rent. Like we talked about, there's so much flexibility that could come from owning that asset. And then we're about balance. So me and my wife, we invest 40% of our W-2 income in the stock market and, different investment vehicles, 401k, Roth IRA. But with some of those things, you can't tap into it until you're 59 and a half. I'm not working till 59 and a half.
Doesn't sound like it, Marcus.
Right. And so real estate, the cash flow, you get that now. You can retire on that and maybe leave, let your stock market investment season until you can tap into those. So for us, we like the balance. But I like both. I really do.
It's tangible. I get it. Like there's so many, there's the major benefits, right?
Yeah. I mean, We love real estate. Mainly, it's funny. I was listening to other podcasts, and actually, it turns out once you get involved in a real estate in a capacity where you start to scale, cash flow becomes actually the least important metric. Like it's important, but the amount of appreciation, the real wealth is actually built in appreciation and debt payoff. And then also the tax benefits are incredible too, because that you're really incentivized by the government to buy real estate. So it's an incredible tool. It's our number one vehicle for building wealth.
Yeah. Well, now that you touched on this too, there's two I want to hit on. First one is, let's just talk about business structure. And that comes up with when I think about taxes. How did you guys set up your business? A lot of people are like, oh, I need to create an LLC, so I'm too scared. I'm not going to invest. I don't want to go pay this money to start this business. Can you just give us the structure? Are these under your own name? Did you start an LLC? What's your little like tree of I guess like funneling all your money?
Yeah. I mean, it speaks to, like I said, my personality of just wanting to do the work and not really wanting to, I just want to get started, right? So for us, we buy all the properties in our name. We've bought them in our name so far. And when doing my research about the LLC, LLCs are great, but I feel like they can cause paralysis. And you're like, I got to get this thing. And no, that just sounds too, it sounds like too much. I'm just not going to do it. When the reality is you can get started with by buying them in your name. So for us, we have yet to turn them into LLCs, but you know, you can mitigate some of that with insurance, you know? So the LLC thing is great, but that's something we'll probably go into as it scales more. But right now we're into the acquisition thing and we're just getting them in our name and cool. Trying to pay them off. Cause you'll come to a point where you have enough in your name, your debt to income, and banks won't really, you know, we haven't gotten there yet, but as we scale, probably get there at some point.
Before we move into like your social media platform and your business there, I want to talk about the eliminating the fear a little bit here. So you did something that I don't think many people would do, and that's living in California, investing in North Carolina, and then saying, oh, wait, North Carolina's not working anymore. I'm going to go to a completely another state. Can you talk a little bit about maybe why you have this kind of fearless, like, oh, this is where the money is. This is where I'm going to go. I've done my research and it fits for what I want to do in my portfolio. Speak to the people that are like, that's too scary. I don't think I can do that. Wow. Yeah. What's your take on it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, I'm just a risky dude anyway. And I'm like, I'd rather try and fail than not try at all. My wife is the polar opposite. So it's funny. It does, you know, when I step back, it's like, yeah, that is kind of, you know, someone would consider this risky, but for me, this is like the way our parents did life, right? Having a great job where you can have a livable wage. I don't even know what that is anymore, but they had a livable wage. Maybe even one parent worked and the other didn't. Like, that's not, we millennials, we don't have that luxury. So for me, it's just like, we have to think outside the box. We can't get comfortable and say, well, it's too expensive in my area. I'm just not going to be a real estate investor. It's like, no, in order to get what our parents had and even better, we have to be more fearless. And I think that that's something that me and my wife has just taken on. It's like, we're going to do things that our parents and aunts and uncles would never even think about doing. We're going to take those chances. And I think for millennials, we really don't have much of a choice. I mean, we lived through some crap. And so we have to do more to get where we want to be. So
it's funny that you say that, because I think that now the risk is actually doing nothing. Like that's the most risky thing that you can do. Yeah. When you turn around and you look at the news or whatever, I mean, obviously the news, I don't really watch the news, so I shouldn't even say that. But when you look at, oh, inflation was 7%. Okay, well, I can't keep this thing in a savings account because that's not going to work. I can't rely on getting a 3% raise at work because I actually need triple that to even make an impact. Mm-hmm. So if you're not investing and you're not taking those risks, one, you're not learning. So that's important. You're not able to fail and then bounce back and make mistakes, but you're actually not able to gain any traction anyway, just by saving. So I love what you said there. And I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. I think you adopted the how mentality as opposed to the can't. Like there's so many people are like, I can't do that. Or just like, nah, I won't do that. It's finding the situation. You're like, okay, Greensboro, we're priced out here. You're not like, I'm done. You're like, all right, how can I continue to scale? And I love that. And you just, you pivot, right? And that's, I think millennials, we are good at that. It's just a lot of people get lazy in what they want to do and like how they pivot, right? There's certain things. So, I mean, it takes truly, we talked about one thing we learned last week on a podcast, right? And we're taking action today. And that's just a prime example of like something that's literally happened this week. But it's so simple, but the word action, like it just takes action to go do it and call and build your network and find resources. They're all out there. Some of them cost a little bit. A lot of people don't want to pay to do things. They're like, oh, I just expect it for free. And if I can't find it for free, I'm not doing it. Good news is podcasts, books, I guess library could be free, but like there's a lot of stuff out there on the internet that is free. And they go on social. A lot of people like influencer YouTube, pages, yeah, like our own, right? And YouTube, I know you guys have a great YouTube. That stuff is out there for free. And that's just your starting point, right? That's free education. And then the next step is when you feel comfortable enough, right? You're never going to be 100% comfortable. Then you take the action and be willing to spend your own cash to make more cash. That's it. It takes money to make money. And like, I forever like now know that to be true from going through it. And you have to be willing to invest in yourself. So
yeah,
just super important to cover.
I think we should jump into we talked a little bit about your social, like your business online, because it's, you know, it becomes a business after, yeah. Even whether you intended it to or not, maybe you did, but can you talk about your social media platform, Black Married and Debt Free? I don't know if I know that's your Instagram handle. Is that what you're known as throughout all social and YouTube and everything?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty much that's who we are. My wife was thinking of using that as a book title, like an ebook title at a certain point when we paid off our debt. You know, we wanted to share our story, and we thought we're going to be the first people to do this. And then we get on social media and we have people like yourself and Carson and different couples who are doing, you know, teaching financial literacy. So it was beautiful to see. So we just kind of jumped in, you know, with our story and with our little contribution. And so that happened very organically. We turned on the camera, like our first YouTube video is still up. I literally say, we're going to turn on the camera, and if we like it, cool. If we don't, I'm going to cut it, and we're never going to do this again. We kept doing it. You know, people, you know, said they enjoyed it. And so I'm a creative guy. Like I said, I'm a musician. I like creating things. I like editing. And so I didn't really have any other topic that I was confident in really talking about other than finance, you know, that really interests me. So we kind of just organically built our platform, and we kept the name Black Married and Debt Free because that's who we were. You know, mm-hmm. we were African-American, we're Black, we were debt free, and we were married. So, I mean, it works.
It works. Yeah, it gets right to the point, which I like too. What made you start, I mean, what made you start documenting it too? Cause like you're going through the motions, but that doesn't mean, well, I guess maybe the answer is you're like an artist, you're a performer. So like you like to be front and center and like you like to share that, but like, maybe you tell me we kind of had a similar situation where like, oh, we love talking about this. Like we're going to talk about it on the phone to each other. Either way, we might as well have people listen in. Like that was kind of the whole thing for us. Is that similar in your story?
Yeah, very, very similar, man. We just wanted to document some of the conversations we had together. It's like, it would be cool to have let others in on this. And so it just really happened organically like that. And it's needed. You know, once you start doing it, I'm sure you guys see the outpour, the response. It's just like, man, I almost can't stop this. I mean, we talk about this from time to time. Like, how far do we want it? Like, do we
want to keep going this? That is so
replying
funny.
All the comments, dude, right. I get it.
Yo,
I get it.
It's another job,
but it's right. needed. It's so needed. And I think it's funny, you know, we had our first podcast and our first, it turned into a YouTube video. Right. And we're just like, kind of sucked, but it's going to get better. It's going to suck. The first one's going to suck. There's no way it's perfect. I mean, it's going to suck compared to what it is now, right? Like you grow and you get better. But the thing is, when we were on social and we were seeing people talk about certain topics, and we're like, we know about that. And like, they're pretty good, but like, we can put our own spin on it. And like, I think that's what you said, right? Your own little contribution. I really like when you said that. It's like, we're all trying to educate and help people elevate their game. And we're also elevating ours at the same time, right? You surround yourself with people that have seen success before you and have done what you want to do. Yeah. What's the best way to get there is put yourself around those people and ask questions. And, you know, it's worked for us and it's been fun.
Yeah. And there's only one Marcus, like, I mean,
right.
Not actually your name, but there's only one of you. Like, so it's like, so you have something to contribute that somebody is going to take a liking to at some level. And that's kind of the way we feel. So if we just be organic and natural about what's going on in our lives, the good, the bad, the ugly, I think people take to that and they're like, oh, these guys are like, just they don't know shit like I don't know shit. So like they're just flowing along with it, like, and trying to learn and pivot and change. And so I think that the being authentic is a huge piece of that. So yeah. I've seen, you know, we follow you on social. I love what you're doing, and it's growing. So that's
appreciate
awesome.
That. Yeah. And the cool thing too is like we get to meet like-minded people. Like I never would have been able to meet Ryan and Corey without having my own platform. You know, I wouldn't be able to meet some of the really cool people I've met if I didn't take that leap and share, you know, and just kind of join the community.
Yeah, the community. You have a stamp of validity to you too when you see that people follow you and that you have right. good content. It's high quality, and that you know, that's part of the game. But
yeah. It's interesting. I just want to touch on that too. It's like, and I think I don't know if we take it for granted, but I don't know if it's like really hit us. We've interviewed and we've talked to all the people that wrote the books we're reading, and we're like, damn, like it's actually pretty cool. It's like, damn, like we read Coach Carson's book and we're like, holy shit.
He was like one of our first 10 episodes.
We were like, dude, we need to get into real estate investing. This is incredible. He's the guy. That was after Rich Dad Poor Dad, right? Which yeah. is the staple. And then he came on the show, and that gave us validity. They're like, oh, they had Coach on the show. And then to tap into his network, like, clearly we met you through Coach, right? Yeah, and then it just kind of spider webs from there, and your people like the platform and they take to it. And going back to what Corey says, it's just the authenticity, right? And people are watching you grow and like evolve your business and life. And it's like, damn, like if they can do it, I want to consume more of that kind of, cause maybe I can do it too.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Yeah.
Super important what we're all doing. It's awesome to meet like-minded people. Like, as you said, it's kind of a perk of doing this whole thing and building your network, right?
For sure.
Yeah. Cool. So we've made it to the second to last segment of our show. It's called the Core Four. We talked a little bit about the Core Four in real estate, but our Core Four is a little bit different. It's trying to get to know you a little bit more on a personal level, what makes you tick. And so we got four questions. We'll fire them at you. First question is, what is your favorite business or real estate investing book that maybe set you on this path?
Ooh.
Or if it's not a book, maybe a resource, a podcast, something like that.
Man, okay, if we're going to go resource, it's Bigger Pockets Everything, man. I mean, yeah. It's like the Google of real estate investing.
It is.
So yeah. I spend a lot of time on Bigger Pockets. I mean, that would probably be it for me as far as a resource.
Cool. And I know you did read, or I was either you or your wife read Rich Dad Poor Dad. So we'll plug that book once again. We plug it every episode, but it's phenomenal, right? And it's more of the mindset. As opposed to just like, here's how to do it exactly. It just gets your gears flowing. You're like, all right, I need more. And like, this is my mindset shift. So love that. Love Bigger Pockets, right? That was our go-to as well. Coach Carson, I know we talked about him this entire episode, but his YouTube videos are incredible. He walks you through on the whiteboard how to run every single function that there is in real estate. And he's just a cool dude. So love him. Second question for you is, what has been your biggest mistake in your investing journey so far, and how have you learned from it?
Man, biggest mistake is not starting earlier. There's something called the time cost of money, and your money, you know, the time in the market is better than timing the market. I think, you know, either people try to time the market, that's not a good time, or they just are not aware. And for me, I was just not aware that investing was a thing, you know, early enough. And that's my biggest regret, is not doing it sooner.
Yep. Totally. That's almost everybody's answer. it's like, if you could do this sooner, imagine how further you would be. But I always like to look at it with the silver lining, is that there's a reason that you didn't do it sooner. Mm-hmm. And you know, you would not be in the position that you are if you didn't make the decisions that you made, and the future is bright either way. So
yeah. Something popped in my head. Was like, yeah, start when you're ready. But then it goes kind of against what we said. Like, you're never going to be fully ready, right?
Yeah.
You could go back and say, what if, like, I could have started then, blah, blah, blah. The point is, some people say, when you know 80%, go in and start. I'm like, dude, I think you can go in 50% and just go.
It depends.
You learn through the motions.
Yeah, it totally depends on your risk tolerance and, like, there's like your entrepreneurial spirit. Like, I can go before 50% for sure. It sounds like you probably could too. Like, but what I always said, and I said this to my brother last night because he wants to get in real estate investing. He's like, oh, I know you need a lot of money. I'm like, bro, you don't need money. You need education. You need to learn about this. You can't just jump into this just because you have $40,000, $50,000 and you're young. Like I said to him, and this is a barometer for people, take it as you wish. Give yourself 6 to 12 months and just learn and just dive in and don't think about what you're going to do until you learn what strategy maybe fits your circumstance. So 6 to 12 months, learn. No, if after you do that, let's say, I don't know, 4 or 5 days a week, an hour a day, at that point, you get to a point of diminishing returns where it's like you're going to get into analysis paralysis and nothing yes. more is going to come of learning or reading that one more book, because not one single book is going to say, oh, this is what I'm going to do. And then you get to call the author and say, hey, is this how it works? Yeah. So at a certain point, you got to take a leap of faith.
Yeah.
Well, very think true. About it. If you're commuting from work, you have let's just say you have an hour. Most people have an hour to work, yeah. maybe 30 minutes. Listen to a podcast rather than the music. If you're going to the gym, turn on a podcast rather than music. I your same song is going to continue to be the same song, but you're basically going back to school for free and learning. If you pick real estate, you have bigger pockets. You have your podcast, you have Coach Carson, you have ours. And that's just like the bare minimum. There's so much out there. And then you're like, oh, I don't, you get home, you say, okay, have dinner, can read in bed. A lot of people be like, I'm going to fall asleep. It's like, great. There's called Audible and you can listen to it and you can do it on your commute again or at your lunch. Yeah. It just takes time. And Corey, you mentioned like 6 to 12 months.
You can do it sooner too.
That's with listening to one podcast a day, right? And like an episode, and you'll get through a whole show by the time a year comes up, and you're like, you could almost finish the entire Bigger Pockets podcast in 1 year.
Yeah.
If you listen to all those episodes and all those crazy different stories of people investing, you're going to find one that hits you, right? And you're like, all right, that's the approach I want to take. And then you peel back another layer and start researching that, like HELOCs, for example, right? We're like, all right, I already have my primary. I have some cash in it. I know this is a thing now, but like, how do I implement it in my life and actually going all in and just kind of focusing on a lane. I think that's an important thing to do because there's so many ways to go about it. It's just find your strategy, find a niche. We picked long-term buy and hold. We're like, okay, now let's drill down. What kind of property type do we want? Then it goes to the loans. Like how exactly we're going to start ourselves out. And now we're at like stage 3 in the loans. You're like, all right, I'm no longer putting 20% down. I'm actually using another avenue of my own personal bank, if you will,
yeah.
and then leveraging it. So you just get in this inception wheel of 1,000 different things you can do. I would just say like, take your time, find your lane, and then like research that lane and then implement and try it, because it may work. It might not work, but then you could try another thing. We tried a rehab. We're like, okay, it's a lot. We don't love it, yeah. but we tried it. And so it was just, you know what you don't like now, and you're more seasoned and more, you're getting more bulletproof as you go along. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I totally agree. That was a lot. That was good stuff.
Sorry.
Okay. Question number 3. So, wow.
I like this completely. One. You don't love this one.
Go ahead. Yeah.
All right. If we handed you a $50,000 check lump sum right now, how would you use that 50K, whether it'd be investing, spending, and just like, think of it like a pie chart, right? Like you can divvy this 50K up any way you want. I just want to see where your head's at as an investor. What you do,
or not an investor? Maybe you want to buy something nice for yourself.
You know what, fellas, I'm taking six, seven G's. I'm gonna have a nice vacation.
You deserve it.
There you go.
One of our better answers.
I need to take my wife to some island somewhere, and then I'm using the rest to invest in real estate in some capacity. Pay down something we have now. Probably it would be to acquire a couple additional properties. So that's what I would do.
Very cool.
Cool. Okay. So the last question is a little bit of a thinker, and it's just more so, what do you want your legacy to be? Why do you get up and do this every day? I mean, to create a social media platform, to invest in real estate, there's very few people that are doing it. It's not easy. You may make it look easy, but it's not. And this is a lot of work. So what gets you out of bed and why do you continue to do what you do?
Man, that's a great, powerful question. For me, it's to give myself and my family options. The option to work, the option to, do what I want, be with my kids and not really have to punch a clock. If I want to, I can. If my wife wants to, she can. I think it's options for me. For my children, it's to leave them something more than I had when I turned 18, right? When I turned 18, it was just like, happy birthday. You know, when I moved out, it was, we'll help you move. You know, I think my parents got me a vacuum. I don't know. I needed a vacuum at the time, but
yeah. I would say these days I'll take that.
Yeah,
nice.
But you know, like I want to give my kids, you know, here's the check for $20,000 or here, we're going to cash flow college, you know, or dad, I don't want to go to college. I want to, I have this idea. Here's a check for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. So I want to just give my family options. That's what wakes me up every morning because I can see the light at the end of the tunnel now. And there was a time when I couldn't. And so I'm gonna try to truck through this thing and get to my destination.
Love it.
That's probably my favorite answer that I've ever got here. That's awesome.
Especially with the 7K and the vacation too. We need one, man. I gotta take
this guy needs.
I really gotta take one. I really need one. Awesome, man. So we made it to the last drop. And the last drop is last segment of our show. What advice would you give your younger self? Maybe you do go back to 18-year-old self, your 18-year-old self, and you know, you can speak to him now. What do you say?
Man, that's a good one. I tell him the secrets, right? I tell him the things that I've learned over the years. One is, I guess in the simplest form, invest more than you save and save more than you spend. Do those three things and you'll be happy. The 35-year-old Marcus will be happy.
Love it.
Love it.
Cool.
That's a great answer. Well, if people love the show, love to hear your story, how can they get in touch with you? Where can they find you on social, whatever the best avenue for people to network with you? Let them have it.
Man, well, first of all, I want to again thank you both for having me on your show. If anyone wants to get in touch with me and my wife, you can find us. You can Google Black Married and Debt Free. You can type that into your podcast browser and it should bring up our podcast. Also, same name on YouTube. We're pretty active there and we're fairly active on Instagram also. So, yeah, just all platforms, Black Married and Debt Free.
Perfect. Love it. Marcus, it's been a pleasure, man. Your story is, you know, we always think about like, what are we going to name the episode? Cause we want people to listen, but because of all the nuggets that you dropped and I haven't come up with a full name yet, but it's your story so relatable. Like it really is like something that, if anybody wants to do it, they can do it. And you're living proof. So we really appreciate your time, man. And it's been a pleasure and thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, fellas. I appreciate it, man. Had a blast with you.
Thanks for tuning in this week. If you enjoyed the show and like what you heard, please subscribe, share it with friends, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. The more ratings we get, the more eyes we'll get on our show. And in turn, we'll be able to provide you all with high quality guests. It's simple. Open your podcast app, type in our podcast name, The Weekly Juice, click on reviews, and let us know what you think. Thanks so much and see you next week.